Welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'm speaking with Edward France, a presidential historian who teaches at the University of Indianapolis. He has written widely on how the American presidency has changed in the last two centuries, and his newest book, The Door of Hope, Republican Presidents and the First Southern Strategy, will be coming out this June. Thank you so much for joining us, Edward, in advance of the President of the United States.
Oh, my pleasure, Ian.
And what is the constitutional requirement for a State of the Union?
It's really just that the president will report to Congress from time to time, which is very limited indeed, isn't it?
Well, how do they used to do it? I mean, has it changed over the centuries?
Absolutely. And this is where many of the people that I describe in the book that's coming out never gave a State of the Union address, because although the first two presidents, Washington and Adams, delivered their addresses to Congress, Thomas Jefferson, the third president, hated speaking in public and so made it a written document. And for over 100 years, that's what it remained. And only when Woodrow Wilson took the step in 1913 of addressing Congress directly did people kind of recapture something that we, in 100 years later, would recognize as being the State of the Union, I would say.
So does that coincide, Edward France, then, with the arrival of media? I guess movies were just invented at the turn of the century, and radio came along a little later than President Wilson.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it would be a decade later when Warren Harding would appear on the radio with a State of the Union address. But I think it reflected more the just curious background of President Wilson, having been a college professor and having studied government. He believed that this was an opportunity, and much of his own research was about how to get congressional government to function more effectively. Implicit in a lot of that was trying to compare the American system with a parliamentary system, and in many respects, Wilson experts have said that was a model that he was trying to emulate a little bit more.
Well, that has echoes of President Obama. He had a kind of to and fro with the Republicans at their retreat, I recall, a year or so ago. And people thought that that might be the beginning of a kind of question time in our politics. But unfortunately, the American people have not been given that privilege of seeing how their leaders interact and how quick they are on their feet.
Yeah, and that really is something that we're really just not accustomed to seeing. I think that at one point in time on television, they were concerned that such images might be, there might be too confrontational, but certainly with the development of cable news and the proliferation of all those stations, they certainly can't believe that anymore.
Again, I'm speaking with Edward France, who's a presidential historian who teaches at the University of Indianapolis. He has a forthcoming book, The Door of Hope, Republican Presidents and the First Southern Strategy, coming out in June. Let's address, if we can, Edward, how other presidents have turned their fortunes around. There's an expectation that President Obama is on a bit of a rise at the moment, but he's got to really turn things around to get a second term.
Right. And that's why I think this speech tonight is so critical, simply because he has enough of a record now that people will say he's not a blank slate, but he also still has enough time in this term to make a mark on it. Historians, we're always better looking backwards than we are looking forward, right? So some event could happen in the next couple months that we never would have thought of that would fundamentally change the remainder of his presidency. So we don't know, but right now it certainly looks like he has an opportunity to shift some narratives, to recraft some strategies, and therefore I think there's going to be particular attention paid to both the substance and the style of what he is saying tonight.
And last time, of course, the president singled out Citizens United decision, the Supreme Court decision that had just happened about a week before last year's State of the Union, and Samuel Alito, the justice, was there and obviously didn't like what the president said. We don't know who's going to show up representing the court this time, but the long and the short of it is, if he is to get reelected, and if this speech tonight is an opening shot in the 2012 election, God help us, 2 years away, that election itself, because of that Supreme Court decision, is probably going to cost over $1 billion.
It's going to be a hefty price tag indeed. And, yeah, I think it's probably safe to say that both the lipped comments that most viewers who saw the State of the Union last year could discern from Justice Alito, as well as the it was a year ago also that the congressman from South Carolina shouted out, "You lie," correct?
Right.
So it's safe to say that people would have been on better behavior this year anyway. You add the rhetoric of bipartisanship that seems to have escalated in the wake of the Arizona shootings, and I think everybody involved is going to be attempting to be on their best behavior, because it's also important for Republicans to show that they can be responsible as well.
And there will be some people sitting together, although the Republican in the House, Mike Pence, dismissed all that with this line, a typical political soundbite: it doesn't count where you sit, it matters where you stand.
Yeah, well, Congressman Pence is from the heartland and represents Indiana, where I live, and there are those who are still speculating locally whether he'll be announcing soon that he's running for president. So all those statements are so parsed with political, potential political meaning that, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think a lot certainly has been made about the way people sit and whether that will have an effect on anything. And more than anything, I think for both sides, it's nice to say it's hard to imagine that that'll fundamentally change things. But again, I haven't seen anything like it, so we'll have to tune in.
Well, it's still pretty likely that there'll be cheers on one side and boos on the other. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of commingling that's going to go on, right?
Especially now, yeah. I mean, I think there'll be that, but you know, should one side cheer or boo too vociferously, if a member of the other party is sitting right next to you, you know, you could at least get a sharp elbow to the gut or a stomp on the foot, which would also be fun for people to watch.
I spoke to a congressman recently, and when this idea was first floated by Senator Udall, and I asked this Democratic congressman what he thought of the idea, and he said, "Well, let's hope they're not carrying knives."
Well, right. My colleagues who do the pre-Civil War era especially would say, you know, there are some benefits to having the parties divided, and you know, whether it's a caning of Senator Sumner or other events, yeah.
Right. Well, they don't have duels anymore. Although that might be a way to get rid of some of the redistricting.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, they just save that kind of rhetoric rather than the actual action. Indeed.
So, in the last couple of minutes, Edward France, again, presidential historian who teaches at the University of Indianapolis, the author of The Door of Hope, Republican Presidents, and The First Southern Strategy, which is coming out in June. Given that this is a relatively new event, but of course in this television age, oratory means everything. And for a while there, I thought, you know, after Ronald Reagan, that it'll be the Republican actor versus the Democratic actor from now on, notwithstanding James Carville's adage that politics is show business for ugly people. But the long and short of it is that being an orator is a tremendous plus in the modern television age.
Indeed it is, and what's striking there is simply to take somebody who was a president in the television age and look at the difference between his words on paper and then his words delivered either on radio or on television. I'm thinking of Lyndon Johnson. If you read Lyndon Johnson in your own voice, you can see rhetoric that is really fantastic. But for many Americans, especially in the 1960s, to attach that face and that accent to those words robbed it of much of the effect. Now, attach the royal affected British accent of Franklin Roosevelt to those same words, and it's something drastically different. So that's where it really is fascinating to ponder those kinds of things.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here in Los Angeles, Edward France. And again, Edward France, a presidential historian who teaches at the University of Indianapolis. He's written widely on how American presidency has changed over the last two centuries. And his newest book is The Door of Hope, Republican Presidents and the First Southern Strategy. It'll be coming out in June. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
Bye-bye. This has been Background Briefing. You may listen to past programs and contact me at ianmasters.com or on Facebook, look for Ian Masters Media. I'd like to remind you that I'll be moderating a free public forum at the UCLA Hammer Museum this Thursday, January the 27th at 7 p.m., free and open to the public. The title is Afghanistan, America's Longest War. I'll be joined by Afghan broadcaster Spasmai Maiwandi and the president of the American Institute for Afghanistan Studies, anthropologist Thomas Barfield. So it'll be a very interesting evening, and I hope you can come. I'd also like to thank producer Spencer Downing and engineer Ray Palayas. I'll be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Until then, bye for now.